Good morning. You're listening to Winning at Life. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. What do you want to talk about? Hopefully it's money. That's what I like talking about. Hey, James.
Hey, Gregory.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Kind of skeptical over this study over here. You just talked about at the beginning of the show, the thing we like to talk about for the next 3 hours is going to be money. You like talking about it 6 days a week. A lot of important stuff in our life revolves around our financial success. And then I got to turn around and I got to see a study here from the Lancet Psychiatry Journal. Researchers from Yale and Oxford published a report here. I guess my subscription lapsed on this one, but I'm reading this from foxbusiness.com. Exercise makes people happier than money is the headline. And here comes Skeptical Parker right up. Oh, really? Really? Exercise makes people happier than money? How about if someone's in front of your face with a clipboard and they ask you, hey, what makes you feel better, exercise or money? There's cultural norms that say you sound like a jerk if you would say money, or you sound like a lazy, unhealthy slob if you don't say exercise. I do not believe studies like this for 5 seconds, Gregory.
You have a problem with a lot of studies.
I do.
I have not seen that study. So you could have money problems, and because you exercise, you're happy or happier. Is that what we're to play on words there?
Well, I think in the world of statistics that these studies roll around, the proper verbiage would be you're more likely to be unhappy or you're more likely to be happy. It's not a guarantee. It's just on average, if you are ragingly healthy but have a horrible financial situation.
Have you, all the staff, I gave out a book last week for them to read. Let me type it in. Make sure I get the author's name. Yeah, The Morning Miracle by Hal Elrod. And he had two major events in life that affected him. And the first one where he was in a head-on collision where a car crossed the road, hit him, and essentially crippled him for almost a year.
Whoa.
He essentially bled out in the car before they could get him out. He was dead for 6 minutes. And his thing is morning miracle. And he said, oh, and that wasn't the worst thing in life. So he wrote a bestseller, it's published, and then that person who handled that upped and left the country with all his profits and everything, kind of devastating him. And then the Great Recession put him essentially, I believe, into bankruptcy. He lost his house and stuff. He says that was the worst time of his life. I thought the car wreck,
literally dying,
and not being able to walk and being told you're probably never walking again. The guy runs marathons now. But that financial trouble, he said that part of his life, that, yeah, because in his talk I heard him give a few weeks back, he said, yeah, and that wasn't the worst thing that happened to me. And then he goes on to explain it a little bit, and it's the financial trouble became the worst thing in his life. The Great Recession, his business went bad. I believe he filed bankruptcy, but he went broke. And his business coach asked him, how are you exercising? Are you doing some physical and mental fitness things? And he said, you need to be in a good place yourself so that then you can deal with these other problems. So it's kind of a little bit different shift from that. And, you know, kind of we were talking about on the break is you don't deal well with, well, you got to get up at 5 a.m. to do this. I'm going to simplify it. Basically, the way I take what Hal is talking about is you do need to make some time for yourself. This doesn't have to be, well, get up at 5 a.m. and do all these things. I just think you need to make sure you do have some time. I'm not the 5 a.m. person either.
So I don't have to wake up at 5 a.m.?
No. I hated that when I was in the Army a long time ago. You know, we do more in the morning before people wake up.
Than more before 9 a.m. than most people do all day?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a flaw, not a feature. I was going to sign up till you said that.
Then you wore out for the rest of the day.
Right. Yeah. Guess I'm not enlisting after all. Think of some examples here. Somebody who can run a marathon and probably run it in 4 hours, but he's flat broke living under the bridge. Is that dude happier than a rich fella who wheezes every time he goes up the stairs?
that guy, and let's say he's not living on the street. He lives in a camper and he travels around the country and runs at different places. Let's not make him poor, but he's not well to do or anything. We're also talking about, where is his mind? He lives for this running around the Grand Canyon and wherever he's jogging and so forth. His mind, he's not about the money. So that guy could be painted as really happy, even though he just gets by, because his thing isn't about material things or having a big bank account. It's about, like, dude, I'm going to go run in this town tomorrow. It's going to be great. That would be his mindset, I would think, different. Now, the guy wheezing up the stairs, is he's miserable both ways. He doesn't want to work out. It's going to be way too painful for him. And he's got money, but, you know, his thing is he's struggling on both. And I don't know that's a fair comparison as well. That guy has work to do.
Okay, so I can't...
And it might kill him if he started trying to exercise.
So I can't say for sure that broke people who exercise a lot aren't going to be happier than out-of-shape people who are rich. But maybe I can add a corollary here. Yeah, exercise will make you happier than money if you love to exercise more than you love having money. But how many people like to do that, Gregory?
Love to exercise?
More than they love having money. Because most people say, if you live in a camper and you got to run a marathon every 3 days, would you rather do that, or would you rather trade lives with Jeff Bezos? Give me Jeff Bezos, even though he's been working out lately. Give me Bill Gates. How about that? See?
Well, I'm going back to the thing where you hear us saying, well, money doesn't buy happiness. Well, broke doesn't get you any either, does it?
All right. So I think the conclusion from this study and us talking about it is I would be a horrible scientist. Scott, Long Beach, Mississippi. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. You're first up. Make it good, Scott.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, Scott.
All right, I got a question. I got to make a decision here before I run out of time. I'm a 47-year-old man, and I just started a new career in the military, working as a civilian, and I got a 20-year hitch that I could be working for them, building up a 401k, but also I'm involved in a 15-year mortgage. And I've got 2 years already paid into it, but we're having some difficulties trying to keep on top of everything in life and everything that's going on. So my question is, should I go ahead and look at the idea of converting my mortgage into a longer term, and then with that have the excess money put into my 401k, or should I concentrate on just paying off the mortgage and then try to dump as much as I can into my 401k? We don't have a whole lot in savings right now.
Well, you're saving money on a shorter term mortgage. In the long run, you're saving interest. But one thing about putting your money to work in the 401k, investing and saving, is you do have compounding that works for you. Compound interest and time are magic things. You know, just the rule of 72. Divide your interest into that, and it tells you how often money's going to double. So a real easy thing is 7.2%, your money doubles every 10 years. Now, that's a stretch on a return, but you kind of get the idea. And I'd kind of hope my money doubles, say, every 12 years, but you get compound interest. And I think you have to do, I probably would, if we were sitting down in one of our conference rooms, I'd probably have a lot more questions for you. But my thinking on that, and I'll tell you from my standpoint, when I did my most recent mortgage a few years ago, I was thinking about 15, 20, or 30. And what I did was a 20-year, because I'd like to get it knocked out, and I'm prepaying some. But I do like the option of having a longer mortgage, but you're not locked into. If you get a 30-year, you're not locked into, you're stuck with a 30-year. It gives you a lower payment option, but you could pay it like it's a 15-year mortgage if your finances are comfortable with that. But I do think you need to also get into the savings mode. You need emergency money, and you should be taking advantage of your 401k, especially if there's matching.
There is matching, yes. Up to a certain point, I'm at the max right now.
Okay. And you need to save outside of that. You know, we have three worlds of taxes. Your pre-tax money's 401k going to be taxed as ordinary income. We should think about, how do we get tax-free income into the mix, and then the after-tax dollars. that you're paying the taxes along the way and have a step-up basis. It gives you a lot of flexibility in the future when you're needing to take income. We're not paying high taxes on every dollar. You know, one of the spots, one of the show sponsors, Mosquito Joe. Oh, that commercial, like, mosquitoes like beer drinkers?
If you have beer in your system, you're like X percent more likely to be bitten by a mosquito.
Is that because of the sugar content in beer? You're a little sweeter and they like that?
I think it has.
What about dessert eaters? Do they get bitten more?
I think it's a mineral thing, because one of the ones that really spikes it is if you're eating bananas. So maybe it's like a potassium thing. I really don't know that depth.
Well, see, that's why I have the Mosquito Joe service. And, you know, other evening we were like leaving the door open in the back. And what's cool about that is it's not just in wintertime, but even during the summer to let fresh air in the house. And I used to always dislike that because bugs are going to be flying in the house, and definitely don't want a mosquito coming in and sitting around eyeing you and waiting for the right moment. He dozes off, I'm going to land and start getting biting. And we just don't have any nuisance from them. Bugs of any kind, fleas. I think it's more impactive than just the mosquitoes. So yeah, I'm a big fan. And I not only do it during the summer, I prefer the year around treatment. And it's kind of like preventive maintenance. So it's neworleans.mosquitojoe.com. Give them a try.
Right. And if you're outside the New Orleans area, if you type in mosquitojoe.com, you type in your zip code and it'll take you to the nearest one. So what I was thinking also when you were talking about that is it's not really that expensive. If you had to pay for it, you would be surprised. It's probably cheaper than you think. But New Orleans, if we could spend $1 billion for an airport we don't need, I bet it would cost less than that to just spray the whole city.
Well, these little spores, I guess, to define it. I'm not real good on the science part of it, but it's a time release that happens. So that when they spray.
Oh, the capsules that Mosquito Joe does. Yeah, it's like the Tylenol.
And it releases over time there. So it's a cool science behind that. And yeah, they come out, they put a little sign on the door. Hey, don't come outside for about 30 minutes. We're spraying. And the dudes look like they're in hazmat suits walking around taking care of that. But man, what's even better is get your neighbors to doing it as well.
Just have a whole dead zone. Nothing grows here. Chip, Old Metairie, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Chip?
I put solar panels on, and I know I get some kind of tax write-off or tax deduction, but I don't even know. I'm not sure which one it is and what the difference is.
So are you thinking about buying solar panels for your house?
Yeah. No, I already put them up.
Oh, okay. And so you're wondering what are the tax advantages of putting up solar panels? Yeah, is there still a tax credit, or is there at least a tax deduction? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, same page here.
Well, I know some of the rules have changed on that, and it's kind of they fund it until they run out of money. Jude Heath, CPA of J. Heath & Company, is with us next hour, but he just walked in the studio, so it's great timing. So what's going on with the tax credits and such? And we've got Chip here from Old Metairie, so he's here in Louisiana. Can you help us? What's going on there?
Yeah. Hey, Chip. Yeah, there have been some changes, like Gregory said, with the solar panels. One good news is they just passed an extender that allowed the federal investment tax credit. Did you get those installed in 19 or 20?
Yeah, 9. So the guys were telling me it was a mad rush, I guess, to get them installed in at the end of 19. At the end of 2019, because the credit was, now is it a credit or a deduction? I don't even know this, but it was 30%. And I think he just said, the guy told me it went down to 26%.
Yes, it's a tax credit. So you're saying you did get it into 2019?
Yeah. So the whole system was about $50K. So the tax, and correct me, because I keep using the words interchangeably, but I think they're two different things. Is it a tax credit or a tax deduction, and what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that a tax credit is like a payment of tax. Now, I don't know your personal situation, but presumably if you owed at least $15,000 in tax or had that withheld from your paycheck, then that would pay your tax and you would have a refund coming. A tax deduction is like giving charity. You apply the tax rate to your deduction. That's the difference with the tax credit.
I'm retired. Do I need to file tax returns? And depends on ultimately my answer. And I've got Jude here to talk more about that. But my simple answer was it's subject to income. But if you've got qualified money, distributions, you still need to do reporting. But the IRS also has a new retiree tax return. And that's the thing I want to get up on the blog if I didn't. I just can't remember if I did that. But I think that's a good thing because retirees are a little bit different from an income standpoint. And we've got to disclose our distributions and so forth because Uncle Sam's wanting to make sure he gets his share. Because this funny thing, you forget to put something on there where you've drawn income or took distributions. About 2 years later, you're getting a letter saying, you owe this and you owe this in taxes and penalties. Send us a check. Or if you have data telling us otherwise, please supply that. I'm really simplifying it, but that's where I would be calling Jude Heath. Hey, I've got a problem. What do I do? I always say, you need to go get professional help.
This is the first I'm hearing about it. There's a new retirement.
It's a senior form.
Senior form?
Yeah, it's brand new this year. And I think what the IRS is recognizing is that when you retire, you know, your line items, the diversity of your return does get smaller. It's a lot of distributions, some Social Security. You know, the number of line items that an earner or a large tax return, presumably your taxes should get a little simpler when you retire. And so I think that's what that senior form intends to do. It's sort of like years ago you had a 1040 EZ, but for seniors.
Okay. So this needs to go into effect not when you turn a certain age, but when you retire?
It is age-based.
Oh, okay.
You know, in our software, it automatically pulls up for on age-based senior, but of course it goes away if the senior's return has a lot of complexity to it.
Yeah, it's called Form 1040 SR. It's a simplified tax form for seniors who have uncomplicated finances who otherwise would have to file Form 1040.
Wait, so if it was a name, that would be 1040 senior, right? Because on a football player's jersey, if you have SR after your name, it's senior. I see what they did there. That's pretty smart.
Yeah, the SR form allows an individual to report income from wages, salaries, tips, and other income sources. New form also has no income test and expanded income category. It's a simpler form. You know, one of the biggest for, I believe it is, on the 1040, and I've not looked actually, and I might pull it up here in a moment, but line 15A and B has to do with your qualified distributions, pension income, and so forth there. Pretty important. I think all of those lines are important, but do we need to do all of that? So I thought that was a good idea.
Yes.
Everyone's on board with it? Because it sounds like if they have that for the long end of the scale, when you brought up 1040 EZ, now that's cool because that was my first experience with the tax world. And I remember when I turned 16, I went down to the local restaurant and got a job as a busboy, $4.25 an hour. And the first time I did my taxes, I did them on a phone. Now, it wasn't one of these fancy cell phones that takes pictures and all that. It was on a touch tone, beep, beep, beep landline phone. And so there was like a 1040 EZ where I could call in and it would go line by line. And using the phone, I would type in the numbers and all that. So it's kind of cool that that went away and was sort of replaced by computers. And I kind of felt sad because unless you're techie, you've lost a simpler option. And this is like simplicity coming back.
Right. And it should. Now, did you pay tips? Did you pay tax on your tips?
I did not get tips as a busboy. Later in my waiting years, boy, I was tipped so badly. If the IRS is listening, I almost got no. In fact, the tips only got me at exactly up to what the minimum wage standard
James
was.
James didn't smile enough. He wasn't positive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, IRS, I was a really bad waiter.
Glowering busboy over in the corner.
It's just a coincidence. I claimed the minimum amount of tips it takes. It's just.
And he wasn't physically fit either.
Right. Horrible.
All joking aside, that is ages 65 and older. So let's circle back around to I'm retired. Why do I need to do a tax return? So help us with that.
Yeah. So like Gregory said, the matching programs with the IRS, approximately a year and a half to 2 years later, will match up all 1099s and source documents that we call in our field that were filed on your Social Security number. So anything that was filed under your social with the IRS, they basically prepare, they mock up a tax return, and they send you a notice and say you didn't file. And so you have to reconcile that. And so you have to be over the filing income limit in order to have a filing responsibility. We hope that that when you retire, that you're over that filing income limit.
So what is that limit?
Let me look that up. It changes every year. I'll look it up.
Thinking out loud, I thought it was $6,500.
That's what I'm thinking, $6,000 or $7,000.
But we'll get the exact number to you after the break. That's coming.
Well, the
up
lesson
here
is
in about a minute.
It's really low.
Right. That's why I say you hope that you're over the filing limit that you're required to file. And so, you know, a lot of folks come in and they say, "Well, I've only got Social Security. Do I need to file?" Yeah, that is true. If all you have is Social Security, because Social Security, you pay tax on the other, whether Social Security is taxable, is on your other income, not Social Security. And so there's that limit too. And it goes beyond that. Folks come in and say, "Mom's living at home with me. She has no other income other than Social Security. Can I claim her? Does she have to file?" The point is that there are a little bit of extra income requirements if you're over 65 or if one spouse is over 65. But the basics are that if you're single, if you have income over $12,000, you need to file. And if you're married, if you're 24,000 is the income limit. If you have income over that, you have to file.
Well, what if there's less income, but it's qualified distributions and such? IRS is good without seeing any that stuff of money coming out, your RMDs combined with Social Security, you have a little RMDs. Is there a situation that's going to, like, you didn't report or such? It just seems more complicated than that just being a number.
Oh, yeah, of course. So just the two things that you brought up, qualified distributions, when you pull money out of an IRA, 401k, whatever, it's taxable. Now, if your only source of income is that distribution and it's under those limits that I just reported, you would not have to file.
Okay.
But if you have Social Security, does some of your Social Security then become part of your taxable income and get you over that limit? And maybe you have to file. So there are other considerations that you need to look at the total piece of all of your
income. Well, when you get to doing the math of that, you know, household, both drawing Social Security, it's 50% inclusive when they have income above $32,000. And half of that calculation, they use half of your Social Security getting that calculation. So if you have other little bit of retirement income, it doesn't take much to get there from a household standpoint. It's like, how do you survive with less than that?
Hey, Ken, welcome to the show. Talking to James, Gregory, and Jude Heath. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, good.
Very good. My question is for several years, I had vehicles and I was using them in business service, and I was able to amortize or depreciate those over 5 years. Is the new tax law, like that went into effect in 17, or the one that just recently went into effect, has that changed any on business deductions for vehicle use?
Well, and I'll take this.
Go right ahead.
So let me ask you, first of all, do you generally place in service trucks or vehicles with gross vehicle weight of greater than 6,000 pounds?
No.
So it's mostly passenger vehicles?
Yeah, or, you know, light pickup trucks or passenger vehicles. So.
Sure. So the 5 years is the same, but the difference now is that you do get a first-year depreciation allowance placed in service, and, of course, all this is based on business miles versus personal miles. It sounds like you have more than one vehicle. Do you have a fleet?
No, I've just got one. I mean, I've had several vehicles over the years and then traded vehicles, and so I just bought a new one this month. So I was just trying to see if I was going to be able to place this just like I had been in the past.
Yes, it might be a little bit more of a deduction at the end of the year for you. I'll tell you one thing that's nice that just changed that will really help you. I've been telling James for years that you can't trade in your vehicle because the IRS treated it as a like-kind exchange, and you retain the basis on your old vehicle. The IRS just changed that rule. Now they're treating trade-ins as an actual sale. Still, you need to recapture depreciation, but that's one nice thing that benefits you because it sounds like you do trade in your vehicles and maybe put a little bit of mileage on them while you own them.
Yes, sir.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that helps you out.
Good. Yes, sir. Okay.
Lease versus purchase. I know you get that question a good bit because I do. I'd like you to share your thoughts on there. And I don't know that it's necessarily just a tax question as well.
Yeah, it's usually not. It's usually which makes more sense financially. And there's some variables there. What I find with leases, let's say like you have, you know, a younger couple and brand new baby, and they want to buy, you know, a car that's reliable. You know, a lease is a nice way to do that because you get a lower payment. If you take care of your vehicle and then you buy it outright when the lease, it's a little bit more expensive, but sometimes those folks, if they were to qualify for that loan versus a lease, the payment would be too high. And so what I tell, you know, folks is that, you know, you look at it, what is the payment? Can you afford it? From a tax perspective, it's virtually, there are a little bit of differences, but basically you get the value of the car written off either in lease payments. There's a little small thing called lease income inclusion, but that's small, and then or you get depreciation. But the bigger issue is, people ask me about lease versus buy for vehicles, is which one is more expensive. Yes, leasing is more expensive than buying.
Well, if we're looking from a payment standpoint, that's not necessarily accurate. From a payment standpoint, a lot of people buy on payments. So a lease a lot of times is less than, and once again, how many years are we stretching out the purchase? And most cases it's probably too many years and they're going to be upside down for a while. And I think what last year before I had bought a vehicle and I looked at and it was a lease. And here's sometimes why I judge a lease is, let's say this was an expensive car, because I did this a long time ago. Evaluation is, yeah, I like this car, I can afford it, but like, what if things don't go well? Do I want to be on the hook for that whole value? Or am I on the hook just for the lease agreement? I like being on the hook for the smaller part, knowing maybe the future isn't quite so certain. So that was my first rationale. And yeah, it was a deductible lease because of business use of the car. And last year, and this doesn't always work out this way, because my wife's vehicle is getting turned in off of a lease. But one of the things I did was look at, what's the value of that car right now? Because there was a car I bought at the end of the lease, because I think the lease had it valued at, say, $50,000. And I looked up at the value of the car and the value was $90,000. So you think I'm turning that car in? No, I'd buy it thing and sell it and recoup a bunch of money. So that was just, see, there's just more to it than just, hey, which is better?
Yeah. And that's a question that you immediately think about when you're confronted with the option. It's like, okay, sure, the payments are smaller, but I am going to be sacrificing equity at the end. And so what Jude's saying, mathematically, it makes sense in the long run because you'll end up with more money. But also what you're saying, Gregory, makes sense too, because in the meantime, having that extra money at the end of the month, you know, there's opportunity cost, things you could have done with that money in the meantime that you didn't, because you're what, rolling it up in equity on a, what's going to be a 6-year-old truck.
Right. Like what I kind of think, Gregory, is like, let's say if you bought the vehicle outright on a 5-year note, the monthly payment would be $600. But let's say you leased it and the lease payment would be $200. But then you had something you had to refinance when the lease came due. If you stretch out all those payments, total cost of ownership is a little bit bigger as a lease. The banks have to make their money. Mm-hmm. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and in the lease, there'll be some other fees and such in there that won't, even on the return side, you've got to look at the condition of the car. They're going to like, oh, you've got a few dings in here. You've curbed all the rims. And that's going to be another $500 you're going to owe us on the back end. Oh, you put too many miles on it. You're going to deal with things such as that as well. Another thing, sometimes people are in leases and the dealer calls them, hey, we can get you out of that lease early and get you into another car. You got to be careful with that, because if they say, well, we can get you out 6 months early, you better read that paperwork. But leases aren't built to get out early. It is payments required for that. It is a contract. They're just eating it. No, it's probably getting wrapped into your next deal because it's a buyout of that end of contract. So yeah, they may be getting you out early and you done another lease. You might want to look at the payment. That part is probably a line item added into your next deal. Be aware of that. With that said, whether you're leasing or buying the vehicle, I don't think you should be buying on payments. I understand you have to look at payments in your budget, but you should be negotiating on price of the purchase, whether it's a lease or whether it's a purchase. You should negotiate based upon price, then decide how long you're going to finance it if you're deciding to purchase it, or what the payments are if you leased it for 2-3 years, whatever case that may be. And one other little tip here, if you're purchasing and financing, negotiate the interest and be careful on the add-on department where you go do the paperwork. They're going to be wanting to get some other stuff. I'd say all that stuff is negotiable. Now, I've got some dealers hating on me right now, but it's a lot of money. Car purchases, you know, are huge deals that we do every few years or so. And people look at it different. Well, I'm wanting to buy a vehicle for 10 years. And some people are looking, well, I just want this one for a few years. But the biggest mistake people make is buying something and then, oh my gosh, this is the wrong vehicle. And you are probably inside of 2 years. That's going to be a financial hurt right there.
Tommy Metairie, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to James, Jude, and Gregory. How can we help you, Tommy?
Yes, sir. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, good.
I got a quick question for y'all. I guess it's a quick question. I'm retired. I get a pension, and I still work part-time. I just turned 66. But last year, I could only make $18,000. I worked part-time. I made over $18,000, so the company just banked the money from me. What can I do with that money?
What's limiting you on the income to $18,000 last year?
My age and Social Security.
Okay. So they didn't pay you, so they're paying you later? It didn't show up on your
correct. W-2? They only right, exactly.
So they were helping protect you on that.
Correct. So they just banked the money, and now I hate to get it in one lump sum because income tax and eat me up. Can I roll it over into something or?
That sounds more like deferred comp there. Isn't that right, Jude?
Yeah. And your full retirement age is 67.
Well, you just turned 66. Were you born?
53. I can make whatever I want this year, they said.
Yeah. He's FRA now.
Yeah. So, it sounds like, what you can do. And I don't know all the situation of your employment. Do you know if they offer a retirement plan at work?
No, it's just a small company.
Okay.
They're just starting a 401k, I think it is, that they call, you know.
Okay, but they just changed the rules on that, so you would be available working part-time, but opt out of it for this year, and, you know, you could make an IRA contribution with some of that money.
How much can I make?
Look up the limit. What's the limit on this year for 2020 for an IRA?
I had the table 6,500,
6,600,
65.
It's 7,000 for contributions this year. Well, how much was your income last year?
18,000. Okay. Plus my Social Security, plus my pension.
Okay. Because of the SECURE Act starting in 2020, if you have earned income, if that income is showing up as earned income, you can continue contributing to an IRA.
Okay. Well, I got 7,000.
It's $7,000 for 2020.
Yeah, and I'm referring to the age 70 deal where you couldn't put, you can keep putting money to work, and that's an option for that money and have it be a deductible contribution if it's, if you're showing up with earned income, and you obviously are, is one thing to do with that money. How much do you have in emergency savings?
I've got a bunch. I've got drop money in a 401k from the state. I've got a bunch of stuff, bonds. I don't have anything in the stock market or anything.
But how much do you have in the bank? That's emergency money.
I'd probably say about 10 grand that I can put the cash, my hands on cash.
Okay. I think you need more there. So that's something to do with some of that money that you're getting, Tommy.
Yeah, but you're going to pay tax on that. But like Gregory says, you know, you pay tax on your emergency funds. But it's good to have a little bit of extra cash laying around.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they'll pay me. I still only work part time, but they'll pay me full time every month this year. I mean, I could get the money that way. I mean,
good to be FRA. Hey, Tommy, thanks for the call. If you need something, give us a call back. We're at 504-260-0995.
Sticking with the phone, guys. You got to add to that?
I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. Ronnie, St. Bernard, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to James, Jude, and Gregory. How can we help you, Ronnie?
Perfect. Good morning. Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got a quick question because I did a little bit of research on it, and I think I know the answer to it, but I just want to make sure. My fiance lives in Texas, and so do her parents. They're retired. They're probably in their 70s, I guess, give or take, middle, upper 70s, whatever. They decided to give her a very nice Christmas present. They paid off her student loans, which was somewhere in the range of, I don't know, between 75 and 100K, give or take, whatever. So the little bit of research I looked at it, it looks like they, not her, is going to be subject to the gift tax. But correct me if I'm wrong. And is there anything, maybe there's any exemption to that?
Well, a gift tax return is going to have to be filed, but they can erode it there at their unified credit. And this is really, you know, a question for Wes, but I'm looking at the unified credit for 2019, mm-hmm. 2020, excuse me, is 11.58. So 11.58 million. So, you know, if their estate is not worth that, then they wouldn't pay estate tax to begin with, which means they'd just file a gift tax return and reduce their unified credit by the amount of the gift for the paying off the student loans. So it's not regardless much benefit.
Regardless of what they earn, they still look like, and I don't think it's much, I'll be honest with you, they're both retired. And I don't think their total, you know, housing and everything else is worth more than that much of that kind of money, $1 million, whatever. I would seriously doubt it. So regardless of you saying one way or the other, it looks like they're going to have to have a gift tax. The question is how much is they going to have to pay on that is going to be the issue,
So no, when I say 11.58, that's the estate value. There is 11.58 million. So there's no income tax in as a part of this transaction, and there's not going to be any gift tax due either. You just need to find, they need to find somebody over there to do the gift tax return and erode away at their unified lifetime credit.
Yeah, which I don't think they've ever done anything like this before that I'm aware of. So
do you think their estate is over that amount?
11.58 million?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, there's not going to be any tax. There's not going to be any tax, and so they just need to find somebody to file the gift tax return because the IRS does look at that. We don't know if we're going to have 11.58 million forever. You know, these things pendulum swing. They have been low in the past, and so they do go back and look at those big gifts after one's death.
Right, the 11.58 is a lifetime total. You're talking about, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, no, I seriously doubt that. Very seriously about that. So he's been a federal worker for quite a long time, you know, like probably a GS-9, whatever, federal worker for pretty much entire life, Park Service or something like that. So I can't see he's ever earned that kind of money, total savings, investments, whatever. I would seriously doubt it. So, yeah. As far as my fiance goes, I don't think she's got any tax responsibilities, does she?
Your fiance was the money? One that had the loan paid off?
Correct. She's the one that received the money to pay off the
loan. That's correct. She does not. The recipient of the gift does not have a gift tax responsibility, a filing or tax.
Right. I didn't think so. Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. Well, guys, thank you to answer my questions. It's kind of what I was expecting, but in a little more detail. So thank you again for that. So you guys have a great day and have a great weekend too. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Yeah. And good luck with the fiance there.
Super positive call. I like Ronnie. He should call back more in the future. Hey, here's this though. If they're gifted stock and the gain, because the stock is not sold, but it has a cost basis. When it's sold, there is a taxable event there, right? Who pays that?
So when you gift stock, you retain the basis of the person that gave it to you. So if they bought Exxon in the 60s, you're going to have quite a gain to pay on that stock. So that requires some planning. A lot of times it's better to sell the stock, pay the tax, and then make the cash.
Yeah, so they're gifted the cost basis, so that's no taxable event to the recipient. But when they sell that stock,
they pay tax.
They're going to have a capital gain
on
that if it was held more than a year.
Well, we didn't plan this, but this might turn out really cool.
Well, we've got a caller.
This is Brenton West Wego.
Okay.
Now, Brenton West Wego called on Thursday's show, and it was a quick call. In fact, I liked it so much. It's a minute and 23 seconds. I pulled it, and I brought it for today's show because I wanted you to kind of expound on the conversation you and Brent had, but here he is calling back. Hey, Brent, I have your call. Can you hang out for about a minute and 20 seconds? We'll play this back and then let you add to it.
All right, hang on. I'll be here waiting.
All right, so that's Brenton West Wego live. Here's Brenton West Wego from Thursday's show, and then we'll get a follow-up here. Brent, West Bank, you're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Brent?
Yeah, I just had a quick question from my brother. He's considering going on disability. He's around 48, and he just wants to know if he goes on disability now when he reaches retirement age and starts collecting his Social Security, will that cause the disability to be adjusted, or will he get both checks fully?
Okay, so we're talking about Social Security disability, right?
Right. He's considering going on disability at the moment, right?
Well, here's what's going to happen, actually, when he goes on to qualifies for Social Security disability. It's going to be based upon what his FRA works out to be with the new calculations when the more credit's going in. And so FRA would be his full retirement age based upon Social Security. So that would be age 67 based on his age 48 now. So when he becomes 67... his Social Security disability automatically switches over to Social Security benefits. He should see very little change in the amount of that benefit. Okay. He does not get both. One converts to the other automatically. Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your help.
Hey, thank you for listening to Winning at Life.
Back alive now, and Brent is live with us to follow up here. Okay, Brent, so that was your call on Thursday. Anything else we can add to that real quick?
Just out of curiosity, when our father got back from Vietnam, he was 100% disabled from a friendly fire incident. He got a check from disability and Social Security for the rest of his life. How come he got both, but yet my brother won't?
It's military.
That was a military disability.
I just thought maybe that they changed some kind of law, or it only applies to that certain instance if you're injured at war.
Yeah, that was that's a separate military deal that pays compensation for injuries, especially in combat. Okay. Number of scenarios. Not the first time I've heard of that. And there's situations where, say, this veteran dies, and I don't know all the details, but that's where the surviving spouse should always check in to, because there's benefits, special benefits available to surviving spouses also.
Disability and Social Security, they're not the same program, but they are tied in together. They technically, Gregory, correct me if I'm wrong, two separate trust funds, but they operate out of the same bureaucracy.
You're referring to Social Security versus Social Security disability.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's supported by, it is two different trust funds, and one converts to the other. So while you're on disability, that comes from that disability trust fund. So when you reach FRA, it just simply, and it is done automatically. You don't have to do anything. Social Security disability automatically shifts over to Social Security. And from a standpoint, that check should be seamless. I won't say exactly, but you won't see much change, if any, in the payment amount, but it's based on when you turn on Social Security disability, they're going to pay your FRA amount, but they recalculate it at that point, considering you're not adding, you're not improving your Social Security years.
Rosemary Wiggins, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, ma'am?
Yes, sir. I'm a teacher, first of all, and I've taught 28 3/4 years, and we have everything paid for, 200 acres of land. We have gold and silver. We've tried to, you know, in, money, too, but getting really stressed out because, you know, school, and was thinking about retiring this year, but I didn't know when to retire, so I'm just asking. I'm 60.
Okay, so how much are you getting if you retire at 60?
About what I make right now. It's a little less.
Okay. Okay. Are you eligible for, okay, are you eligible for any Social Security benefits?
I could do disability, but I don't really want to. I was just thinking maybe part-time job, you know, like you were leading up to, getting a part-time.
Okay. Well, I didn't ask about disability. Are you retiring?
No, I'm because a diabetic. Okay. I'm a diabetic, but in really good health. So, you know,
I see.
Just know, you know, yeah.
Well, as a teacher, were you a part of the state program? Did you participate in Social Security wages as a teacher?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I also put in deferred comp. And that's really growing right now, if that makes
okay.
sense. I made $8,000 in 3 months. So.
So you're telling me that essentially your retirement's going to be similar to what you're making as a teacher,
right.
based
and
on the pension.
Right. And I don't have to dip into deferred comp, if that makes sense. I don't have to
okay.
go into that.
And you have a deferred comp. Do you have any other retirement assets saved?
Other than my husband's saving also, everything's paid for. We got probably a good bit in the bank. I don't want to say exact amount.
That's okay.
He has his own business. He owns his own business, so, you know.
Okay. And you're going to turn on Social Security a few years down the road. What is your birth year?
9/20/60.
Okay, so your FRA is 67. So if you wait mm-hmm. to FRA, which is what Social Security and they're thinking about it, is they think that's when you should turn it on. So if you take it earlier,
right.
it's going to be discounted. If you defer, you could get more. But we know
right.
you have another benefit turning on down the road as early as 62. But gosh, that's a huge discount on that.
Right. So I should wait until 67?
Well, that does well. In a general discussion, FRA is best, but that doesn't mean it's always the correct discussion, because we would talk about what's the correlation to Social Security and your assets and your pension, as well as your spouse. It's not just a simply, oh, I should wait. It's another conversation, and it's a pretty important decision, and it also brings into your health as a consideration
right.
as well. Is that affecting your life expectancy, your health? So that's, you know, once again, Social Security is not a simple, well, based on this, just do this, or always wait. That's not always the answer. We talk about it in theory, because if you wait, you get more. But
it
sounds like just from your core question, you know, you don't any, is it time to retire? Well, what you have is options. You're almost a
right.
lateral move in income. So you're switching from actively working to passive income, and that's going to be almost the same. You have no debt. You are getting more benefit in the future because Social Security, you've got deferred comp. You're not needing to touch that. So it's almost that if you continue teaching and working, it's because you want to, not because you have to. And if you're wanting to do something else, you have those options. And that's what I always talk about. What is retirement? It's having options.
Yes, sir.
That if you don't want to do that job, you don't have to. It sounds like you have options, Rosemary.
Well, thank you. We always work for that.
Well, can I poke around in your situation a little bit here? Because Rosemary, yeah. I'm thinking of, I'm an inherently lazy person, so that might be the perfect setup for this, is it sounds like such a lateral move. What is your reason to keep working? I'm thinking maybe you love your job, love the kids, it's fulfilling. You're worried about if you have nothing to do, you'll deteriorate. Maybe the health care costs, where you're getting your health insurance through work and your husband's self-employed, so you're getting a better deal there. Like, what? Why would you even question this?
What, retiring?
No, continuing to work, the opposite.
Oh, okay. I probably stress at work, if that makes sense, because it's getting more stressful. And I don't know. I mean, I love my job. I love my kids. I love my husband. Everything's great. But we have always worked so that we can retire, if that makes sense. But because it's up to me this year, because, you know what I'm saying? My husband said, well, I don't know what we should do, you know, and he's usually very good. He said I could retire or, you know, whatever, but I don't want to make the wrong financial situation. So that's what I'm looking at.
Just checking. That's all.
You're in great shape. Yep. Keep us updated, Rosemary, and thanks for listening to us.
Well, thank you. I think I might go by the, is it on Canal? No, where is it? Your office down on the coast?
It's on Lorraine Road, Gulfport.
Okay. Gulfport. Okay. Yeah, I might call them and make an appointment. Thank you.
Awesome. Look forward to seeing you. Yeah, the office number, if you're wanting to reach out to us for questions during my daytime hours during the week, we've got a Gulfport office, a Mandeville, Louisiana office, and a Metairie, Louisiana office. One number, 504-832-9200, to ask us a question during the daytime hours or to set up an appointment, get some help, whatever you're needing. All right, another caller.
We going to stick with the phones here?
Yeah.
Okay, then we are going to have to talk to Sheila in Hattiesburg. Hey, Sheila, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, ma'am?
Hey, Gregory. Man, I've got a problem. I'm 66, and I started drawing my Social Security, but they told me I could still keep working, wouldn't have to take out Medicare or nothing. And I've always got a tax. I got a refund every year. But this year, they hit me with a 1099 and saying they give me back $17,000 last year at from Social Security. And I'm scared to death. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so you're 66 now. So you turned on Social Security early?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I did at 65, but I just heard you say the FIA is 67.
Well, it depends. It depends on your birth year. What year were you born?
53.
Okay. Your FRA was 65. Did you say
66 in a few months?
Okay. No, I'll be 67 in October.
But what year were you born? 1953. Yeah, so it's 66 in a few months. I don't have the table exactly in front of me, FRA table.
I'll be 67 in October.
Okay, so she started a little early. Is this like a clawback thing? But where's the 1099 coming from, Gregory? Do we know?
Okay, so you had earnings last year from your work?
Yeah, and that was 48. And then I started drawing the Social Security. They told me I could draw that and still work. And I wouldn't have to hold out Medicare because my job is holding, I got insurance through my job.
Yeah, so you were born in 53, so your full retirement age was age 66. So you turned FRA last year, correct?
Yeah.
And had you turned on Social Security before that year?
No, we just started it.
Okay. Yeah, Yeah, you're at FRA. If you misunderstood, that was for somebody that was born 1960 or later. FRA is 67. So if you were born between 1943 and 1954, your full retirement age is age 66. If you were born, for example, in 1954, it's 66 and 2 months. So each year moving forward, you add 2 months to it until you get up to 1960.
But I'm still going to have to pay taxes on that money again, ain't I?
Right, but you're not getting penalized on your Social Security. But if you've got a 1099, and how much were your earnings on that?
17,000.
And knowing you're probably getting a pretty good Social Security check, yeah, you got to file a tax return. I would recommend that's a taxable event.
Oh yeah, and they're gonna make me pay again. Well, I've always got it. What scared me though is they're gonna add my earnings from the job too, ain't they?
But Sheila was received a 1099 for earnings last year of about 17,000. So how much could you give me an idea about how much your Social Security check is, Sheila?
$1,569.
So it's roughly about 18,000 in income there in that case. So
yeah,
you're a neighborhood of about 35,000 annual income. So that kind of reason 45. I was asked, that includes your husband's as well.
No, just me.
Okay. Well, at 45.
I've never been married.
Okay. Huh? Okay. So 45, if your total income is 45,000, half of Social Security. So essentially what we're getting at is you're 85% inclusive. So 85% of your Social Security is going to be taxable in that range. Single with modified adjusted gross income of 34. Let me just run a calculation.
And I take care of somebody. I mean, somebody's staying with me. I've been taking care of somebody for 20 years.
She is 85% inclusive. 85% of her Social Security is going to be taxable because of her income. Did you have another question, Sheila?
Yes, Gregory, please. I've always got a refund back. As much as, as far up as 1600 all the way. You know, if I make like 45,000, I can get at least 1200 back. But I was wondering, could I file the 1040 and get that refund back and then pay the 1099 that I know I'm going to have to pay?
Well, you're going to have to do full reporting of your tax year of 2019 when you file that. You can't file it one way and then said, I've got to do this. So
I can't do two.
No, you're best to do it all at once. It's a little misleading if you leave something out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
This is my first time and I'm scared to death.
Okay. Get some help. That's what tax professionals are for. Get somebody to help you with that to make sure it's done right. Correctly. You don't want to get one of those letters saying you owe money 2 years later. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life. And that was Sheila from up in Hattiesburg. That's where I grew up, in the Hattiesburg area, by the way.
Yeah, but everyone, the first year you turn on Social Security when you have to do your taxes, this is going to be the first time you've ever done it.
Yeah.
And that's something we talked about in the previous hour. We're going to talk about it a year from now too, Gregory. Lewis in Gramercy, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm going to be retiring on May 1st, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not to turn Social Security on or not. So what information will you need from me?
What's your age?
I was born 2/27/1954, so I'll be 66 in a couple of weeks.
Well, that's going to be your full retirement age. So are you retired? You're retiring, so you're not going to work any longer. Any other income sources?
Well, I have a pension of approximately $1,100 a month, and I have probably in the neighborhood of $700,000 in IRAs, Roth, and traditionals, and just regular money markets.
So how much does it take a year for you to make a go of life financially?
I would say everything's paid for, but I would still say 40,000.
So how much will Social Security be for you?
Approximately 2,500 at 66 and 3,300, if I remember right, at age 70. And that's the question, is whether to wait to 70 or not.
Okay. You said it's 33.
I am married.
Okay. So income's 3,300 a month for Social Security if you wait at 70. Is what you said?
Yes.
And how much is it going to be now?
25.
So 30,000 versus 39,600. Any income coming from your wife?
She's trying to decide whether or not to retire. She's a teacher, and she's hadn't decided whether to go back next fall or not. She will be 65 in April, so she can't turn on until 66 in 2 months. So that would be July of next year.
Okay, so she's a school teacher in the state of Louisiana?
Yeah, well, it's in the parochial system, so it's not
State retirement. Okay, you know where I was headed. So she's getting Social Security benefits and retirement from the parochial system.
Yes.
And you were saying your need of household income needs to be around 45,000?
Okay, 45. Yeah, let's call it 45.
Yeah, so the two income sources you mentioned to me is 41,200. She's still working. You're not necessarily needing to turn on Social Security at this time to make it work. So
what would be the advantage to waiting?
Creating a larger income for the rest of your life.
And hers.
So how much do you project her Social Security to be again?
If I remember right, I think it's around 1400.
Yeah. Yours is bigger and going to get bigger.
Yeah, it is. And because I have some health concerns, barring an accident, she'll outlive me. And that was the concern. I would like her to get the bigger amount. And if the bigger amount would be beneficial to wait till 70, I would definitely want her to get the bigger amount.
Okay. So what plays into that is her retirement situation and income. Does the household income still work and you deferring? Because she's going to be able to turn it on in the near future and she's still working. So all of your income works right now. So deferring, and how is her health good?
Very good.
Okay. So yeah, and everything being equal, the ladies outlive us guys anyhow. But you are creating a larger check and deferral. And one thing to remember, understand about Social Security, because some people say, well, if I wait, how long does it take to make it up? It takes about 9 to 10 years, give or take a year. That's why I said 9 to 10 years. But If somebody was to turn it on at age 62 and a like person across the hall from them waited to 70, you know when the break-even point for both of them are? Age
probably
80.
About 18.
It's age 80. Everybody breaks even is how Social Security is designed. But the one that waited to 70 to turn on is getting a bigger check and is going to draw more than the other thereafter. So that's where life expectancy comes into play. Household income, assets. I assume you have some other retirement assets saved?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that was the 700,000. I was kind of figuring with 4% income from the 700,000 being 28,000 a year, plus the other pension that you mentioned is 41,000. And so your household income can work, and Social Security is something to consider deferring because of how much it builds up there. So this is kind of just a quick conversation because you do have 700,000 and investable assets. I used a 4% number. I still think 4% stresses assets. But when you tie all together, you've got justification for deferring a little while longer. And she's still working. I would definitely defer. And then probably if she's making plans to actually retire, hey, give us a call and have a conversation. We'll help you through the calculations.
Well, the backup plan's on the blog. If you go to GregoryRicks.com and go to the blog section, the things that we were going to do, a few of them are already up there. So tax changes for 2020.
Let all the stations and networks we're on tell them we're running long, so push off everything. Would they do that?
Wouldn't that be sweet?
I don't think they're going to let us do that.
But also something
we end at the top of the hour.
We planned on talking about this about 30 minutes ago. I doubt we're going to get to it. But the process by which you turn on Medicare, you have your little 7th month open enrollment window. What happens if you miss that? There's a great run because a lot of people miss it, don't know what to do, hard to find answers. Here you go. And so many of the rules changed on January 1st that if you do Google searches for some of these questions on IRAs, especially because they changed a lot of those rules, you'll get a lot of bad information out there.
We We send out an email every Wednesday with a list of questions that's posed to us through the show at some of my speaking events and written in, and you can get on that our email list, and we answer questions every week that goes out. That regarding that Medicare, if you didn't sign up for Medicare, that's on our blog at gregoryricks.com, along with a lot of important articles regarding your money, and we add to that list every week, so it's searchable as well.
All right, now back to the phones. Bill, Baton Rouge, you're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Bill?
Yeah, I would like y'all to walk me through. I'm retired from a parish, drawing a broker of retirement. I do have my 40 quarters in, so I qualify for Social Security. And my wife has 40 quarters in, so she can draw Social Security. But how does... I think they call it windfall elimination provision affect her Social Security. I know okay. It's going to kill mine.
Okay, so you did not participate in Social Security for the most part. You did get your 40 quarters in. That's equivalent of 10 years of Social Security earnings, but you didn't get much more than that, correct?
Yeah, that would be a fair assessment.
Okay. Did your wife...
I did 25 years in a parochial retirement system.
Okay.
The rest of my, I've got probably about 15 years in the private sector.
Okay. What about your wife? Did she participate in Social Security?
Yes, for 40 something years.
Okay. So your question is how it's going to affect her?
Correct. I know windfall elimination provision guts my Social Security. But does it affect hers?
Yeah, it yours does not affect hers, but you don't have much benefit to leave behind because you only have 10 quarters. So I assume on the pension you're receiving, is she considered in the continuation of that pension if you were correct. To die before her?
Correct. I took a reduced benefit, so she continues it after I die.
So what percentage is she getting of it after you die?
The whole thing.
Awesome.
Exactly. Exactly what I draw, she's going to continue to draw.
That's plus how I like about, to think about it. Yeah, that's I've the way it should be.
Deferred comp, probably $475,000 that we haven't even began drawing. We're just basically living off my pension.
Yeah, so when she's going to receive the pension, but she worked through, she got all of her time in Social Security and put away during her working life. So what's going to be for her? You die before her, that scenario, she's going to receive 100% of your pension, and she's going to get whatever pension she has, and she's going to receive her Social Security benefits, the most important part. So she's going to get your pension, and she's still going to get her Social Security benefits.
So windfall elimination provision won't affect hers at all?
It will not affect hers because she put her time in.
Okay.
So easy answer to that. Congratulations. Well, I'm glad you did that on the pension because I don't know that we talk about how that should be looked at, but I think
say it again.
Spousal continuation 100% is the preference. To make sure. You say, well, I took a haircut. No, you didn't. You did it how you're supposed to do it. Congratulations on that.
Anything else
to her?
Nope. That pretty well takes my mind at ease knowing that she's not going to get penalized for the windfall elimination.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
Well, thanks for listening to Winning at Life, Bill.
Kind of a sweet call there. All right. Yeah. You want to anything to add? You want to go
love
straight to
success
the next one?
Stories like that.
Heck yeah. All right, stick with the phones. Gary, Baton Rouge. What can we do for you, Gary?
Yes, I have never really invested any money in anything except maybe a savings account. And I've got about approximately $130,000 I could do something with, and I would like to see what would be recommended.
Okay, so what were you saying about your savings account?
Well, that's about all I've ever done. Growing up and as an adult, I have a little money in the savings, but that's not making anything. I was wondering what you might could recommend to get the max out of my money.
Okay. So you have a total of about $130,000 you're looking to do
something
with.
Yes, that I could fool with. I I've got a little more money, and I'd just like to see what you recommend.
Okay, so is there any savings outside of this $130,000 in the bank or emergency money, or that includes?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, I've got a little more.
What's your age, Gary?
66.
66, and you are receiving Social Security benefits. Any other pension income?
No, sir.
So what do you think about risk? Do you?
Well, I'm always been nervous about risk. That's why I've never really invested any money in anything, but I've never asked anybody that really knows what they're talking about either. And that's why I call this you.
Yeah, so you have to take risk in consideration, and that's what I was going to ask that anyhow, but I figured your answer is I'm pretty conservative, and you kind of said that in a different way. You get nervous about risk, which tells us we really don't want to go to risk. And there, and when you also say, well, I've got this money saved up in the bank and I need something to do with it, well, that once again tells me that you're conservative, because that's where that money was. If you're putting it, say, in the stock market, you know, that thing can go down. It can go up, but the problem is the going down part. Bonds are more consistent, but they do create a little bit of exposure as well. They can go up. They could possibly go down as well. So what you have to determine is there any tolerance for what amount of movement down would help that? Kind of, if you're not going towards that route, there should be consideration. You probably need to do some CD shopping. If we were going to stay away from Wall Street, there's a consideration of fixed annuities for some of that money, probably half or less. But it also depends on the terms of the surrender period. But go ahead. We've got 1 minute left.
I wanted to ask what are people investing in? Is it oil, minerals? Where are people really that are investing lots of money? Where are they investing?
Well, primarily in, from my world and what I believe is a better way to invest, we use a mix of stock ETFs, bond ETFs, and index-linked investing using fixed annuities to get a proper blend, so the cycle of financial life keeps you moving forward and helps minimize downside exposure when it's properly blended. That's kind of what we see from our world. We don't do the gold. We don't do the minerals, stuff like that. If you would like more help with that question and others listening, my office number is 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
Yeah, that sounds like the beginning of a pretty good meeting there. You're home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app, which will be back up on Monday. I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.